Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
I'm here to help.
On August 21st,
we have a story.
Mutiny arrives on the big screen.
Who are you?
It is, trust me.
Jason Statham stars in the action movie to end your summer.
What do you want?
Vengeance.
Mutiny. Rated R.
Hey, it's Fran from Chicks in the Office. It's peak summer. One plan is turning into five, but trust, I'll be wearing Abercrombie to all of them. Catch me in their Sloan tailored pan at work and then the happy hour right after, the Dylan dress for dinner plans when you want something easy but still put together, and of course, their denim, because Abercrombie denim just works, no matter the plan. Keep up with the pace of summer without overthinking it. Shop in the app, online, and in stores.
On this episode of Project Big Screen, The Bride, exclamation point. The Bride, exclamation point. We were reviewing that movie, one of the, I'm not even sure how to say it, one of the wildest things I think any of us have ever seen in theaters. We'll be talking about that. Hoppers, new Pixar movie. Is Pixar back? Pretty good breakdown of the Oscars in terms of what to expect next week. What could happen, maybe what to bet on there if you're looking at DraftKings, what to bet on with the Oscars. And then finally, top 10 what the did I just watch moments, or movies, excuse me, which that should probably give away what we think about The Bride. All that and more coming up on Project Big Screen. All right, Project Big Screen, episode 23. Kind of perfect. It's the Michael Jordan episode, because we're talking about the Michael Jordan of movies today. The Bride from Maggie Gyllenhaal. It's definitely a Michael Jordan of movies. What that specifically means, I guess we'll get into. Not success, I guess, that's for sure. A take on The Bride of Frankenstein, another Frankenstein movie, which that's unfortunate that they came out with this so close to another Frankenstein movie, which is, while we have varying degrees of thoughts on that movie on this show, it did get an Oscar nomination for Best Picture. And it's probably going to win a bunch of technical awards, too. And then talking about Hoppers from Pixar, probably for not as much time because we have quite a bit to get into with
The Bride. We got
to
spend an hour.
Oscars talk.
We got to spend an hour on The Bride. I'm sorry. This is the most excited I think I've been to talk about a movie, at least since Marty Supreme. But this is in the top three. I think this one battle after another in The Bride is like, exactly.
I had to. I honestly, if I wasn't doing this show, I probably would not have seen it a second time. But I didn't even know what to say after the first time I saw it. And then we're also going to do a ranking top 10 what the fuck did I just watch movies, which we should define when we get there because I got a couple questions. Like, it does change the list a little bit. And we will talk Oscars because since we last went on, the Oscars race has been upended with the Actor Awards, SAG Awards, which we anticipated there could have been a little bit when we last talked, but not to the extent as to what happened. Which is a week away. And I believe we'll be doing a recording after the Oscars air. So the Oscars episode will air and we will have the full reaction to what happens at the Academy Awards. The 99th Academy Awards? Next year's the 100th, right?
Wow. The Dick Van Dyke.
I know the last one ABC has is the 100th. So it might be 98th.
Okay. I know we're close. We're close to 100. And I believe Kirk is back next week too. I know he's very excited as well about the Oscars. We have a race in almost every category, which is very, very, very rare. So soak it up if you like the Oscars, because it just doesn't really happen like this anymore. But first, let's talk about The Bride. From director Maggie Gyllenhaal, who also did The Lost Daughter a couple years ago with Olivia Colman, which quite great. Really good movie. Clearly showed that she had the goods. And with those goods, she got a chance to kind of do something different. And so she cooked up the bride, exclamation, the bride, exclamation point.
Actually, Jeff, it's the motherfucking bride.
The motherfucking, bride.
We'll get to that part in a second. A Lonely Frankenstein, which I'm going to say something here. If you have not seen this movie and you just want to hear us talk about it, We will do a non-spoiler and a spoiler section as well. Though there's a little spoiler thing off the top I think you have to mention. Otherwise, you can't talk about this at all.
Right.
So this is I don't think this is a spoiler at all. But if you really don't want to know anything, I would stop listening right now. This is a really minor thing. This movie is told through a weird narration from Mary Shelley, who wrote Frankenstein. She is a character in this movie, a voiceover, and she possesses the bride. Like, yes. She possesses the character who becomes the bride. That happens in the first 5 or 6 minutes. So if you're still listening, you're like, that's a split. I'm telling you, you kind of need that framing device to know what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Happens right
away. Was this known, by the way? Was that like,
I didn't know that out there?
I didn't know that.
No, I had no idea.
No clue.
I actually looked around in my theater and I was like, is this like something? What is happening here?
Yes.
So anyway, a lonely Frankenstein. Yes, Frankenstein. He has taken his father's name, as he says. He is now Frankenstein, not Frankenstein's monster, which I kind of appreciate that a little bit, because that's always like it's not Frankenstein, it's a monster. He travels to 1930s Chicago to ask the groundbreaking scientist, Dr. Euphronius, to create a companion for him. The two revive a murdered young woman, and the bride is born. She was murdered after she was possessed by Mary Shelley. Again, this all happens in the first few minutes. We won't say much more spoilers after this until I tell you a spoiler section. But what ensues is beyond what either of them imagine. They basically become Bonnie and Clyde, which you can tell from the trailer. 2 hours and 6 minutes long, feels much longer than that. Based on Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, as well as the Bride of Frankenstein and other Frankenstein properties. I won't say what yet. Jesse Buckley in the lead role. She's going to win an Oscar, and this is going to be out in theaters. That's kind of insane. Christian Bale, who just is doing things now, I guess. Annette Bening, Penelope Cruz, and Peter Sarsgaard made $13 million worldwide, $7.3 domestic. Projections from the studio were $16 to $18 million domestic. Humongous flop. Budget is $70 to $80 million, I believe. But there are rumors it was $100 million. Which is insane, though it does look good. I will say the movie looks like there's some nice set pieces. Like, that's not the problem with it. Apparently Netflix passed on this. That is the story. Yes. Because the budget was too big. Which that's not like that's again
that's made up. That's,
what about Netflix or Columbia or whatever? Nice. That's not a problem for Netflix. Netflix will spend $900 million on
the electric state.
Yeah, AI fart slop. Like they don't care. Like, they'll spend money. So this must have been like, imagine getting turned down by Netflix. Is like, they'd be like, what the fuck is this shit? So yeah, I will say this before we all likely skewer this movie. There are some people who like this. This is absolutely, I think, going to have some sort of cult following over time. Because it's just weird. It's messy, but it's ambitious. I've seen some comparisons to Babylon, which I don't love fully because I liked Babylon, and I didn't love Babylon, but like, I think Babylon is a little more coherent than this. But I think it's clear you're going to see some people who like, this is going to become their fucking personality. Like, oh, the bride was
you didn't like the bride.
I really didn't like this movie. I admire the swing it took. It took a really, really big swing, but man, it took too many swings. The swings were all terrible, like pitch in the dirt, bouncing over the catcher swings, like not like even close. And I just think it's way so on the nose that you'd expect the movie to stop and be like, hey, you get that? You get what we're doing here? Like, that's like how on the nose some of that shit is, like crazy. Some of the there's a mob crowd, a crowd of people in like a movement, and they're chanting something. And I was like, are they really saying that right now? So yeah, I'm still baffled by what I watched. I'll give it credit. I think the performances are fine. Like, I actually don't like, I think people say Jesse Buckley's bad, but like, that's what she's supposed to be doing. So I don't really like,
yeah,
you know, over the top. So I gave it a 46. I don't like it. I give it some points for ambition and some things that I'm like, if that had been done well, this would have been cool, but I don't think any of it's done well. It looks good. That's the one big thing I'll say. Like, they did a good job with the production. It looks good. It looks like a competent movie. It just isn't one. It's wild. It's a wild, wild, wild movie. I can't my head is still spinning from it. So that's my score. Ken Jack, what'd you give The Bride?
I'm sitting at a 20 out of 100 for The Bride. And I think we talk a lot on this show, and I wrote this down before you even mentioned it. I'm glad you mentioned it. We appreciate filmmakers and actors taking swings instead of playing it safe. And it's definitely, like you said, a swing. But to me, it is like that, like a 360-degree strikeout from like a Hanna-Barbera cartoon where they go like and like fall down. It's one of those. And it feels to me like Maggie Gyllenhaal watched like Poor Things and was like, I could do that. Like, I could do that same thing. I'm Maggie Gyllenhaal. I can do this better than Yorgos Lanthimos. And I think if you're going to do this sort of, I hesitate to say even like feminism or girl power type of movie, I think you either need to be very subtle or purposely way over heavy handed. And I think that this exists in the margin of humongous error between those two things. And I just, it was weird. It was a never ending mess. I think the most impressive thing you get out of it is that you have the two worst career worst performances out of two of the best working actors in the business. And like, I agree with you. It's like supposed to be like, they're doing what they're supposed to be, but they are two of the least palatable performances I would say either of those actors have ever given. And that is an impressive feat in its own right. When you watch something like The Lost Daughter, like, I don't know how, if you're WB, you say, well, if Maggie Gyllenhaal comes to town, after making The Lost Daughter on like what a $10 million budget, we gotta give her $100 million to make another Frankenstein movie. I don't get the logic behind that. I don't get the thinking on anyone's end here. And I think I'm willing to say right now, we need a full on retirement of Frankenstein for a long time. We need like a 10-year moratorium on Frankenstein movies. We're done with it. No, I'm not just talking about direct one to ones. I'm talking about stuff like this, where you're adapting and changing it. I'm talking about stuff like Poor Things, where you're, you know, doing like the same themes. Guillermo del Toro is going to be starving for this 10-year period, by the way. But like, we just can't do it. I think we need a break from Frankenstein for a decent amount of time. No more of like man-made monster can't integrate with society. I think we can do with a break from this. And The Bride, I think, is the last nail in the coffin there.
Yep. I'm like, okay, enough. Like, I'm good. We're all set for a while. That's like, yeah, that's my Frankenstein. In terms of not just the movie, just Frankenstein. Howard, I would agree completely good on that. Climber, what'd you give it?
What did you give it, Ken Jack?
20.
Which that is lower than what you gave Psycho Killer. Right?
That's Psycho what I'm saying, man.
Like, I think you gave it a 20.
Dude, these to me had like, and like, well, obviously The Bride more, when you look like production value stuff, that's all way better than Psycho Killer. But like,
no, man, I'm not questioning like this score at all. I'm just like, yeah,
it was bad.
Yeah, like I'll say too, like my 46 is obviously like I hated it, but like if you took out all of the movies I've seen this year that are that like the back to back like streaming, like the direct to streaming Ryan Felipe one part two movie, if you take all that out, like this is like one of the bottom five or six movies I've seen this year so far. Yeah. So like this is like, I'm telling you, like this is like right there with The Wreck, which I hated The Wrecking Crew. So like this is like right there with that. So yeah, 20. I think 20 is a super fair score. I think.
Yeah, for no, sure. For sure.
I watched The Wrecking Crew 500 times before I ever considered watching The Bride again.
Yeah, I saw it again because I didn't think I was like, did I miss something? Like did I like what? Like, not, yeah. Clemmer, what'd you give it?
I did not like this movie. I'm giving this a 41. I think I liked it more than you guys did. Or at least appreciate it maybe more than you guys did. Look, this is what
I definitely appreciate some of it. Like, I want to be very clear on that. I do appreciate the swing. Like, it definitely toes the line for me. Like, the whole theory that I'd rather see a movie that takes a big swing and fails than a movie that's like, I'd rather see like a 45 that takes a swing and fails and see something that's like a 65 and is mediocre and unmemorable. This does push that, though. Like, this is testing the theory heavily. Like, this is as far as you can go before you cross the line, basically, is what I'm saying.
It does, but I've seen 10 movies in theaters already this year that are worse than this, in my opinion. Look, this movie doesn't make any sense. So Mary Shelley possesses her, but then Frankenstein exists in this world, so how did she write something that exists? Like, the whole thing, and that's just one small thing, that's right up top. Like, you can go through this with the entire movie. I think Christian Bale's pretty good in this. He's a great actor, obviously. I thought his Frankenstein was pretty good, but this movie is a complete mess. It makes no sense as it begins and somehow makes less and less sense as it goes on. But this, I give a lot of credit to Warner Brothers here. This is good. This movie existing is a good thing. Like, this is this is kind of the cost of doing business. We get one battle after another. We get weapons. We get Sinners from Warner Brothers. These are giving these directors a chance to make something original and creative, and now those worked. But sometimes you get a Mickey 17, and sometimes you get a this, and those don't work. But that's the cost of doing business, and that's okay. Give me this. Give me weird. Give me shitty. Give me crazy. Give me just bonkers. I kind of dig it, but I just don't give me down the middle. That's all I'm asking. And so is this movie good? No. Do I recommend it? No. But you know what? I've seen a lot worse this year already, and we're only in March. I've seen 10 worse movies this year, and I'll see a lot more worse ones. And I think you guys will too. But whether you hate this or not, are we going to see 30 movies that are more creative than this? Probably not.
My only counter to you on the cost of doing business thing is, like, if Maggie Gyllenhaal had like one best picture or like been like a big award winner for Lost Daughter, and I'd be like, yeah, well, now she gets hers, right? Well, like she got
three Oscar nominations.
They got three noms for Lost Daughter. Yeah. But like, if she had been a big winner at like even the movie's a big winner at the box office, or if it was more huge, like if that I would get, and it was like, oh, well, you need to give her this big swing now on the Bride.
I hate that attitude, honestly, Ken Jack. Like,
you're saying it's cost of doing business. I'm saying like that is the cost of doing business. That's when you give like Damien Chazelle Babylon or something like that, because he just had all these nominations and wins coming off of another thing. That makes sense to me, because like you give them Ari Aster doing Beau's Afraid. You give them the money because they earn the capital. I don't think Maggie Gyllenhaal has earned the political capital in Hollywood yet to make a swing like that for that amount of money anyway.
I don't want there to be like a merit system where you have to earn. She made a movie on her own that she wrote and directed that got three Oscar nominations, including one for best screenplay. Those are the people I want to get $100 million movies. This didn't work, but I want those people to get those movies.
I would agree $100 million but not for this. I think it's way too niche of an idea. If you're saying give $90 million to go do like a brand new original movie or like something like just interesting, or I don't know, maybe even an IP, whatever, like that I think would make more sense.
This is more niche than bunch of kids going missing. This is Frankenstein. Like, this, I don't think this is as niche as you say.
It's like I'm saying like it's like the 15th Frankenstein movie to come out in the last year, and like you're doing like you're giving $100 million to do another one, and like that to me I don't get the logic there.
She doesn't get $100 million if her name isn't Gyllenhaal and she isn't correct able to pull a string to get Christian Bale. I'm sure that was big part of getting the budget was the fact that she probably had Christian Bale signed on before she even went to Warner Brothers.
Like, oh, yeah. And then you have, of course, don't get me wrong, that obviously helps her. Look at this cast. We haven't even mentioned, you got Penelope Cruz, her husband, Skarsgård. Like, this cast is loaded.
She sure does.
Her brother.
This movie sure does have.
Her brother's in it, right. Like, so, I mean, you guys are right. That's true. And that's where she does have a leg up on your average director. But I don't know. I just want to see studios give people money to make creative, interesting movies, because I think that's when you get greatness. And unfortunately, that's also when you get bag of shit.
Gooch.
What was your score?
What'd you give it?
41. 41. Yeah. I mean, in 1818, Mary Shelley wrote Frankenstein on a dare. And I think if we asked her today, she probably would regret that.
Not what some people are saying, though. I'll pull up a great review while you do yours. Hold on. Go ahead. I'll read the review though after you're done.
I mean, the thing is, like, Maggie Gyllenhaal thinks she's the bride when she's Frankenstein. She is digging up a dead body and fucking it. Like, this is grotesque what she does to the story of Frankenstein. She completely contorts it into something that it's not, and it comes out so ugly. Like, just like it looks like a kid trying to make food for you. Like, it's just a plate of just fucking mashed potatoes with mustard on top. It's disgusting. With that being said, I was absolutely compelled the whole way through. I would recommend this to almost anyone. Like, it's one of those things that I really think you gotta see to believe it. It's so absurd. There's big stars everywhere taking big swing performances. Kenja, you said these are bad performances. I actually don't agree with that. I think Christian Bale's pretty good, and I think Jesse Buckley's kind of fantastic. Like, the
so I did amend it. It's not necessarily performance, but like those are, but I role, think the two performances, the roles are bad.
Like, I'm okay. Actually split between the two of you. I actually like Buckley. I did not like Bale. Bale, like, I could not stand Bale. I was like, this is just, again, maybe that's just how they were told. I mean, clearly that's how they were told to do the role, but it just, his did not work for me. I was like, what the fuck.
I mean, he's kind of doing like some sort of like incel type like Frankenstein. Yeah. He's like, oh, I need a girlfriend. Girls like me. Well, she just make her pretty, make her like me. It's pretty bad. Yeah, there's just like so many absurd things that I can't wait to dive into in more spoiler section, but just a crazy fucking movie that you have to see to believe. I'm at a 40. Like, I think this is the movie that I most thought of was Joker Folie à Deux, and it has a lot of the same behind the scenes people on it, which I found out after the fact, which now it makes complete sense. It really looks like the Joker movies, has the same composers, so there's a lot of score similarities. But when I thought about it, I gave, I think, Joker 2 a 30. This was more entertaining. This is just a lot more. Like, I was very entertained the whole way through, even despite it making no sense for, I think, like 90% of its runtime and being quite frustrating at points. And, like, you kind of want to, like, stop the movie and turn to the person next to you and, like, laugh at some of the things that are being said. But, yeah, no, I really was entertained. So I have to give it a 40. Like, I can't go lower than that, I don't think.
I just don't know, I guess, in my head. I mean, she got a lot of money for this, obviously, but I just, I'm surprised. So not, I don't know. I'm surprised that this was the swing she took in her first chance to kind of make whatever. But I'm surprised she took this big. It is like, again, I commend it, but it is like people are comparing this to Mickey 17. Bong Joon-ho's made countless incredible movies. And then he went for something different and he tried something like, and I also, I still like Mickey 17. I know I'm kind of in the minority on that, but like, that he made that after many, many, many things. She got her first chance. Was like, fuck it. I'm doing whatever the hell this is.
I mean, I brought up Mickey 17, but the reason that you bring that up is just because it's an example of Warner Brothers giving someone
a blank check.
It's in the same slot, too.
They're very different movies. I'm not saying that.
I'm just saying, like, you're not. You're dead on about that. I'm just saying, like, Bong Joon-ho has a long track record, and then he took the big money swing where it's like she did. And again, maybe it's part of the fact, I hate saying this because she is talented and Lost Star is great, but like obviously the name helps a little bit here. But it's like she took that. Even like Ari Aster got his big money and took a crazy swing with Bo is Afraid, but he still had a couple things before that as well that had worked where I'm like, it's kind of crazy. She went from Lost Daughter to this. It is nutty.
Very different movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's
like
crazy.
If you told me that was the same director, like just like you covered the credits, I wouldn't have believed you.
Yeah, these movies
could not be more different.
Unthinkable. Here's a great review from the Newman Times Herald, Noonan Times Herald, Jonathan W. Hickman. I had to read this review. I saw this when I was scrolling around Tomatoes. Should surprise no one that The Bride is sweetened up with enough post Me Too angst to give any red-blooded MAGA Epstein-era misogynist a motherfucking toothache.
Oh,
Mary Shelley would no doubt approve. 5 out of 10.
What? I was expecting like 9, 10.
That has to be a typo. That can't be his actual. So I was like, what? It's like, what the fuck is that? All right, so we're going to spoil it now because we got to get into some of like the small details. And this, so if you want to see this movie, which I'm not sure I'd suggest this to everybody, but to your point, Gooch, if you're someone who likes going to the movies, I think go see this. Like, this isn't like a, hey, you got to be like a fucking film buff. Like, no. If you're someone who likes going to the movies, you know, maybe you love Marvel stuff, maybe you love Disney stuff, maybe you love A24 stuff, maybe you love small stuff. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, if you're someone who goes and sees anything, definitely don't skip this because this is one of those things that you're going to see and you're going to be like, what on earth did I like? It's worth the discussion point. So we're going to spoil it now. The most shocking part of this movie, hands down for me, I swear to you, I literally had popcorn in my hand. I put it back in the bowl and I sat. I was so my brain melted to goo. And I think this scene is why I had to see it a second time. When they played Putting on a Ritz and he starts dancing, I was like, they may as well just played Young Frankenstein behind the dance nut. I couldn't believe it because he starts to – so the Frankenstein character starts to go over and talk to the Jake Gyllenhaal character who – in my head, I was like, that's really like – bright. Every time you see Frankenstein imagine himself in a top, I'm like, it's very bright of Frankenstein – or it's very Young Frankenstein. I'm like, huh, okay, it's a cool homage. The second he starts like pantomiming, like
Fred,
tipping his top hat, I was like, are they going to fucking play this song? I was like, there's no way. And the second it starts playing – I was disappointed that no one else in the theater like came over to me and was like, "Are you seeing this shit?" Like I wanted to talk to everyone. Like, what is happening right now? I could not believe that they did that. And it fully took me out of the movie, like more than I had already been out of. Like I was at this point, I felt it was another planet. I was like, "What is happening right now?" I could not believe that. I was blown away.
It's so funny. Like that's something that should be like not a career ending type of scene or anything like that. But like that's one that should. I can't wait for that to come to streaming and to be posted. You know what I mean? Because like, that's one of those ones that'll live on.
It's not even the worst needle drop in the movie.
No,
the worst needle drop
not.
In the movie is the end credits.
No, for sure. No, that
it
was awesome.
Shocking though. I could not believe
so
it.
So awesome.
The whole Jeff, that whole scene is crazy. Think about what's going on. So they're running around New York City, and they happen to run into the same room where they're having a party where Frankenstein's favorite actor is at. Like, what are the odds of that? And no one is too surprised about it. Elements of just no logic in this movie. I guess that's the craziest movie. The movie feels like a fever dream because there's just no logic anywhere. Nothing makes any sense.
Would this movie have played better with a different, and this is like a genuine question, like a different cinematographer? Because the cinematography is so grounded that it like it's too realistic. Like if there was like a more fantastical look to this movie, does some of this stuff become way more palatable? Like does it, if it leans harder into that fever dream, like because you're right, the script is complete fever dream nonsense, but the way it's shot, it's meant to be played like very serious.
You know, you could say the same thing honestly about Joker too. Like
yeah,
it was supposed to be like that whole song and dance hallucination shit, but then it's just like it's shot the same exact way that they shot Joker 1, which is just not that. So, by the way, that makes it even funnier for Warner Brothers to read this script after Joker 2 fucking torpedoed into the fucking crust and being like, oh, it's the same movie. Let's try it again. Maybe it'll work this time. They'll even double worse on them there. Great work, Zaslav. Always.
Oh, now see that I'm going to push back on.
He had a great year. They had a great year
for that and then appreciate weapons, one battle.
They had a great year. It's just a joke. He's a bad CEO, though. But is it just a joke?
Is he? Oh, I mean, he's bad for selling it.
They're like $80 trillion in debt.
They were in debt before that.
And also tried to put this, he tried to put HBO in the same universe as the 90 Day Fiancé universe. He said they were equal level properties when they first put together.
We completely agree, but he's next week, you know, he's going to be a Best Picture winning CEO.
Yeah, no, hey, he had a good year. He had a good year.
Can't be that bad.
That will be funny when the ceremony closes with Zaslav on stage.
After he just cashed out his fucking $200 million stock.
He gave a director freedom. That's all I ever want from my CEOs in movies. That's all I want.
You know what I thought was crazy? The opening scene when she just falls down the stairs for like 2 minutes and it's like basically like the hot rod scene. Like she's falling down the stairs for like
was
straight
she
up
murdered?
Minute.
Was it? I thought she just like fell.
No, she was pushed. She was pushed.
Yeah, then they killed her.
Okay.
She was talking crazy. She was switching
she was
between
crazy, but I couldn't really tell. Like
that's where I thought like the Buckley, like the accent switching was fucking crazy. Like she's like using like it's like having Michael Jordan on like a JV like women's basketball team. It's just like why are you here, Jesse Buckley? Why are you using your talents to do this? Because that is like probably impossible to do. Switch between that Chicago accent and then like a straight up 18th century Cockney accent. It's a terrible choice. But it's impressive that she could pull it off.
Very impressive. I was also, they set up this bad guy. What's the bad guy's name? Lupito? The gangster?
That fucking guy. By the way, that guy's, no one's gotten more work more quickly than that dude.
Yeah.
But then we don't see him in the third act. He's gone.
Yeah. He's with his tongues. His
tongues it's very strange to set up a bad guy and then no resolve, but all right.
How did you guys feel about after that scene, the immediate following day, there's a woman revolution across the country where they scream brain attack. That's the most absurd scene of the movie, I think. The brain attack scene is so fucking absurd.
Well, not just that, but they have the throw up on their face, too.
The throw up on the face kind of makes sense to me, but, like, you couldn't come up with a better, like, fight the power slogan than fucking brain attack? Brain attack! Brain attack!
More the signs they're holding in Joker 2, because that also... They had like the riots, right? Fuck.
Yeah, they did. This is Joker Foley adieu.
It is.
Foley adieu.
It's I said in the beginning, it's so on the nose. The Me Too stuff, like literally me, like the people saying Me Too. It's just so there's no subtlety to it, and that's where it really breaks down for me. It's like, all right, like have a little, it like there's enough of an artistic vision here that I can respect it, and like I can see like I get what she was trying to do, but it's like have a little bit of fucking nuance at least to string it together. It's like just
or go the other way. You got to go like I think there really is just like the gray area she was in was bad. Like. You gotta really swing, like go like full on, like zero subtlety, or you gotta go all subtlety. Like, you just can't be in that in between zone.
Mm-hmm. Does she ever work? Does she get another job again? Like, maybe they give her like a $10 million movie, something small. Like, she'll never get a movie like this again.
Obviously. She's not like this, but like, she's a talented director. I mean, Lost Daughter's really good. It's just, I don't know. I don't think I would give her this again.
Yeah, I don't. She's gonna lose this amount of money? How can she?
He's going to watch Begonia and try to make that next. He's going to be like, I got an idea, Warner Brothers. Another $100 billion. I got a movie about aliens coming down.
Mm-hmm. The aliens will go to a club in Bushwick. Oh. That was, what the fuck was that? They go to like a club and they're playing techno music, which that can be fun. Like the anachronistic, like different time period. Like that can be fun. Just terrible. Just awful. It looks like they're like some steampunk, like Matrix Revolutions, like ass, like. Mm-hmm. Cave.
This was I mean I'm still thinking about it, so I give it credit, it at least did that. But like I said something, I filmed a review that I was going to post online. What did I say? It's something along the lines of like this will blow your mind, and I don't mean that in any remote way as a compliment. Like it's not a compliment, like not in the least bit. It will just from the framing device of Mary Shelley alone, like that's enough. I mean, first off, the open, it really thinks it's like badass too, which really, again, that irks me, and it's no salty. That opening thing when she's like, here comes the motherfucking bride. That's one of the worst lines in a movie I've heard in probably half a decade. I mean, it is so fucking corny. The guy behind me laughed. I laughed too. He left. Our theater laughed. He left after the dance scene. He never came back, which was a disappointment because I kind of was hoping I'd get a chuckle out of him when I laughed. Like I kind of want to give him like that look after, like, oh, what did we watch? But no, he bailed. He was like, I'm not doing this shit anymore.
He missed so much good stuff.
This thing is crazy. I joked on here that I wanted this to stink. That's never the case. I never want a movie to be bad. But there was like a little bit of me that there was something about this that just never sat with me. I was like, man, this just doesn't look like it's going to be good. But I never, ever expected this. I will not take credit for saying I expected this. This is beyond anything I could have imagined this would have been. This is crazy.
Yeah. I do think crazy movie. Just looking at Bale's filmography, he has a weird, this era in history has been very unkind to Christian Bale.
So I have a theory on this, by the way.
The Bride, Amsterdam, Public Enemies, like this specific period has not been very nice for Christian Bale. Maybe just kind of stick away. If your movie's set between the 1920 and like 1945, Bale, just say no. Go do something else.
I think he's just taking checks right now. Like I think his kids are at a certain age where he just works whenever is best for him, and he's working with just people he knows.
Fucking Al Davis in the, what do you call it, Madden movie. It's
David O. Russell. Yeah. Just going to go work with David O. Russell.
Yeah.
That's bad. This is danger territory for Christian Bale. Also, what percentage of that, what was it, 8 million opening? What percentage of that opening were like men in their 40s and late 30s who love The Dark Knight? Were like, I'm showing up for anything Christian Bale does. And they showed up for this.
Like, what the fuck?
Probably so mad.
He's also, I guess, what's the next thing? He's going to be in Heat next, right?
Oh, that'll be back on track.
Yeah, that's good.
But there's always the chance. It's not like Michael Mann has been great lately.
Also true.
No, and I know. Actually, awesome. Kirk. I was talking to Kirk about this recently. He's read like what Heat 2 is kind of based on, right?
The book.
I know people don't love it.
I heard that they're like the time periods, like one time period. I think the past part of it, is way better than the future part of it, from what I've heard.
Yeah, it's not exactly beloved. So
yeah,
We'll see. Oof.
He also has this.
This was something else, man. I don't even know what to say. Like it just crazy.
His other one he's got coming up is The Church of Living Dangerously, how America, one of America's biggest pastor became a drug runner for the Mexican cartel, from David Kushner.
So that's American Made, starring Tom Cruise.
He's doing American Made again. Poor fucking guy.
Oh, man. What a movie. One of the greatest things I've ever watched in my life. Thrilled I saw it. Thrilled we got to talk about it. What an absolute fucking disaster. But I tell you what, that the most annoying person you know is going to tell you this thing is fucking amazing.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing about these kind of movies.
You didn't understand like the love story angle. You didn't. What do you mean? You didn't think it was beautiful? What?
You're just talking about.
That's basically what you're going to get.
Chauvinist.
But you know, quick, before we move on, you know what's a movie that's a lot worse than this? And I think we all agree. Mercy.
Mm. Yeah.
Is a lot worse than this.
Yeah.
Mercy's definitely a level down a little bit. For me, I mean, they both stink. I don't know.
I mean, this movie truly does look great.
It does look very good.
And I was like Gucci, like I was bizarrely like entertained the whole time. I know, Jeff, you said the runtime felt long to you. It kind of didn't feel that long to me, just because it was so weird and like partly terrible that I was like, I was kind of entranced.
No, it's the Daniel Craig in the first Knives Out where he's like, it's grotesque, but it compels me. It just
that's what it was.
Again, at least it's a swing. I think that's the thing we all agree on, right? Like, it's at the very least, it was a trying to do something versus trying. Like you, I think you say it a lot, Clemmer. Just like sort of hatred of people are like, let's just do the safe thing. Let's do like the thing you've seen before. Try to appeal to everybody and appealing to nobody as a result. So yeah, I do at least appreciate that.
But this is bad. I'm not. Yeah. This is a terrible.
Yeah.
This is like
directionally correct, but the movie's just bad. Like
you could argue this is one of the worst scripts of the year.
Yeah.
Like I would have a hard time. Yeah. Like she wrote the logic is just all over. Like it's just madness.
Didn't make sense when they did a crime in Niagara Falls and then 6 hours later they were in Indiana. That didn't make sense to you?
No.
What are you talking about?
What a picture, right?
What a fucking picture. So that is
he did the mesh.
That
he
is the bride. Unbelievable.
Yeah, monster mesh.
that was like really funny, to be honest. Like that was probably the best decision in the movie.
Unbelievable. So that is the bride. Time to talk about Hopper's new Pixar movie. From Daniel Chong, longtime Pixar story artist, getting to direct his first Pixar movie, hold on, I don't know if I have that completely right. But yes, Hoppers, brand new Pixar movie that did really well at the box office. Biggest opening for an original Pixar movie since Coco. Did about $88 million worldwide. Coco did about $107 million. So big opening, $104.7 million worldwide. Coco did in its opening. 94-94 split Rotten Tomatoes. That's massive. 7.7 IMDb, 73 Metacritic, 3.9 on Letterboxd. Scientists have discovered how to hop human consciousness into lifelike robotic animals, allowing people to communicate with animals as animals. Animal lover Mabel sees an opportunity to use the technology, uncovering mysteries within the animal world beyond anything she could have imagined. It's Avatar. It's Pixar's Avatar, basically, in terms of like what that concept is. Piper Curta, Bobby Moynihan, Meryl Streep, John Hamm, Dave Franco, Sam Richardson, ton of other voices. The reviews early were very good, but you never know what's going to hit. Great to hear that this thing is hitting at the box office. Ken Jack, what did you think? What'd you give it?
I like Hoppers quite a bit. And I think that for us, especially like we've been kind of down on Pixar lately. The last few entries just haven't been up to the standard, because like they were like a no miss studio. Like everything they made was gold. It had like the certain feel that we've all like kind of liked, I think, right from the start, and they kept that continuous sort of vibe throughout it. And this is really good. I gave this an 85 out of 100. I liked it quite a bit. I think it was a return to all the stuff that makes these movies great. Like just a very simple story, great messaging, cute creatures, and just like fun little adventures. And the animation obviously is great. I mean, even in the bad Pixar movies, the animation looks great, but like animation is awesome. And like you feel something watching this. Like you feel You feel like, I'm trying to think of the right way to describe it. Like, it's almost like you're a kid again when you watch something like this, which is a big strength for any sort of Pixar movie. And I think that it's super easy to absorb. I love the message, like the pro nature stuff will always be a hit for me. John Hamm, by the way, just playing John Hamm, loved that. I think he was awesome. I think the whole voice cast was tremendous as well. Shout out Bobby Moynihan. Thought he was
Bobby
tremendous.
Moynihan.
Bobby Moynihan. By the way, we didn't get a chance to talk about it, but Gosling on SNL last night was awesome. Crushed it, as always. Really, really enjoyed Hoppers. I think it's a super easy one to recommend. To me, it's the best Pixar has done since Coco by a decent margin. So I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Clemmer, what'd you give it?
I liked it too. I'm at a 77. I thought this was good. This is much better than Elio came out last year. I think Kenjack's right. You feel something. Pro nature, pro respect to animals. And I like that the main character was not like a perfect person. Like, she has some stuff she needs to work on, anger issues, and kind of some interesting things about like fanaticism, what it means to obsess about things, and like how that can not always be a positive. I don't know. Like, I thought, like, and there's even one moment, I won't, obviously, we're getting to spoilers maybe, but like, one moment it was like laugh out loud, shocking, funny, really good. I don't care how old you are. This is a movie that I think you can enjoy, and I think we're all adults here. You don't need to be a kid to enjoy this. You can watch this as an adult and take something away. I appreciate this movie quite a bit.
Gooch?
My review will sound more negative than my score. I do think this is a good movie, like 70 out of 100. And it's like right in line with what Pixar's kind of been up to the last 10 years. And it's more back on track with, like, and I've talked about this before. I would love for them to gear more towards children, which I think they kind of got away from for a little bit, especially with like Soul, Luca. Like, those are just more adult themes, and it just feels not entirely geared for children, which I think these movies always should be first and foremost for kids. And this one is, but I'm sitting there, and at the end, I'm feeling moved, or I should say my eyes are tearing up, but I'm feeling a bit empty. Like, I don't know if this really grabbed me the way the great Pixar movies do and make you, like Coco, you sit there, you cry in the theater, you're crying a week later when you start thinking about it again. I don't know if I'm ever going to think about this movie ever again, ever. So it's like this empty calorie situation where I know it's still good, but it's still lacking that just magic. Maybe I'm just old. Maybe, you know, I'm in my 30s now, and maybe these things just don't work for me the way they used to, but it really feels like that magic is just still not back yet. So I'm at a 70 out of 100. I think it's a good movie, but I don't think it's reaching that upper echelon for me.
Yeah, I liked it quite a bit. 86 out of 100 for me. This places it right in the bottom half of Pixar movies, which says a lot. That's not a hit on it. I just, the top half of Pixar movies are amazing. It's right below. I'm a day one Bugs Life stan. Fucking love Bugs Life. It's been lost in time. Doesn't get the respect it deserves. But I mean, look what it's below. It's below all four Toy Stories, Soul, Finding Nemo, Monsters, Ratatouille, Incredibles, Inside Out, Wall-E, Up. Like, what are we doing here? I mean, it's crazy. But this was this felt like they let the reins off it a little bit. Almost like they kind of let their, like, I don't know what the best way to describe it is, but it feels almost like they've tried to hone in too much knowing what makes them good and trying to hit that lane, where this one, they kind of let it fly a little bit, got it kind of a little goofy, kind of out there, a little more in the humor aspect, and they're like, oh, hey, you know what? If the moments come with it, the moments come with it, right? As opposed to trying to make something that clearly is trying to make a moment, that's trying to make you tear up. And, like, I think there's definitely some kind of eyes well up moments in this, and it comes together and says something nice at the end. And I enjoyed it. It felt like they were having fun first, as opposed to trying to make a statement first. I'm not saying that's always the case where that doesn't work. Like, I think Soul was trying to say something, and Soul was excellent. But sometimes that doesn't work for Pixar, right? Sometimes they are trying to say something, and it kind of gets lost in the fact that, like, you feel like they're actively trying to say something, as opposed to just making a movie that tells a story and you connect with it because it's telling a great story. So I think Hoppers is, I'm again joking, it's in the bottom half. Like, anything below an 80, anything around 85 is like bottom half for Pixar, because they've made so many great movies. But yeah, I thought this was a much bigger return to form than I'd expected with a movie like this, and very happy it's doing well too, because this is one of those ones where it's like, you, if you're a movie person, you want the, like, you should applaud that the original Pixar is doing well. That's a great sign. I will note, they have marketed the shit out of this movie. Like, this isn't a movie that they didn't market. Like, I think we've seen marketing for this movie everywhere on any Disney entity for a long time. But they did a good job with it, and I'm glad people are seeing it, because as excited as I am for Toy Story 5, original Pixar is an unmatched thing. When they're humming and then they're moving along on original stuff, it's great. So yeah, I was a big fan of Hopper. Do you think James Cameron liked it, Gooch?
They referenced
a lot of Avatar here.
Probably.
Jeff, you made a good point. This is a lot more fun than Elio. Like, Elio was just not fun for me. Like, this movie, you could, to cartoons, you can, but it almost felt like everyone was like, the characters were having fun. Like, the script is fun. Like, it's enjoyable, but also has like Gooch and Kendrick were saying, like, it has like a real like levity to it with some of the things they're talking about, but they don't do it in a way that's like dragging it down like an Elio. I had a good time. I don't really know how someone could watch this movie and not walk away, at least be entertained. I don't know how that's even possible.
Mm-hmm. That's funny. Yeah, I like the additional side guys too, like Dave Franco, I thought were really good. Like the little tiny mini Bug King or Sky King. Dave Franco, I thought crushed it, by the way. Just every line he had killed me.
He was really good.
I thought Meryl Streep was very funny.
I know. That I didn't realize that was her until after the movie.
I didn't either.
I went through the cast list and I was like, oh, that was Meryl? Meryl was in this?
Yeah.
Was that supposed to be a cameo? Like a big reveal? Like, were you supposed to clock that was her voice?
She's in the trailer, right?
I don't know. I don't know.
So. I don't know.
The trailer.
I think she is, Jeff.
They have like a high council scene in the trailer. And so I thought that was her, but I don't know. Maybe they hadn't really said it like dead on. Also, hey, you made a role with Meryl Streep and it wasn't annoying. That's great. That's an achievement in the year of 2026. What was the movie Florence
Mary
Foster
Poppins?
Jenkins?
Oh.
Remember they're just giving her Oscar noms because she existed in movies? They're like, oh yeah, she's in this. This is great.
What's that old bag up to? Right. Let's get her something. It's so annoying. But yeah, I think there's a lot about this. I would agree, maybe like, I think if I were to put my final rankings of Pixar, I'd be around Jeff, where this would be like just touching that upper half for sure. I would agree, like, this is, you don't walk away with it as a memorable feeling as something like Coco for sure, but I do think that this is significantly like leagues ahead of something like Elio or Lightyear for that matter, like not even in the same stratosphere. I think it really comes down to, with Pixar, you got to be funny. You got to have a like decent message to give, like whether it's about friendship or in this case, like our harmony with nature and all that stuff. And you just have to have, like, I think, good, snappy sort of screenwriting. You know what I mean? Like, that sort of kid humor, I think, is kind of hard to do correctly. And I think that Pixar, like, it seems anyway, like they're back on track in that department, which I'm very happy about.
We have been inundated with talking animal movies. We got Goat. We had Zootopia 2 just in the last like 4 months. I'd say this is better than those two. I don't think this is as good as the original Zootopia, though.
Original Zootopia, I'd say, is better than this too. Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, no, Zootopia, I'd have. If we were doing Pixar ranking, Zootopia is up there with like the Monsters and the Cocos and the Ratatouilles for me. Because, I mean, the original Zootopia is fucking excellent and so funny. And
really
so Zootopia is, talk about it, just a fucking monster movie, Zootopia 2 was. Zootopia is so big overseas, it's crazy.
They're good movies. I'm glad
it is. They're great. They're excellent. They're excellent animated movies. Yeah.
Bunny is so fucking hot.
Oh, sorry, this was this was good though. high suggest on Hoppers. Whether you have kids or whether you're not, and you just want to see a Pixar movie, like, this is definitely, go see Hoppers. Like, absolutely, incredibly enjoyable movie.
Clemmer, what was the one moment that you were referring to before we got into spoilers?
The bug? Are we
the
bug squish? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was kind of surprised by the amount of like actual animal death in
my
this movie.
My theater blew up when that happened. Like uproarious laughter. Like, shot. I was shot. Like, it was just the way it happened. The way it was shot. It was just really expertly done.
Very funny.
Great moment.
Like, wiping it down on the wall.
So funny. So funny.
Yes, that was so good. Oh. That and the potato emoji. Really, the kids really liked the emoji. The dictation.
That was funny. I like that.
Yes, the kids were dying at like when it was potato. They were losing their minds.
Yeah,
that was really fun. That is Hoppers, Pixar. I think most people agree. Whether it's fully back or not is one thing, but it's definitely closer to form than they've been in a long time. And for many, it is back to the form that they've expected and wanted from Pixar originals. And again, making money. And that's great to see with an original movie from Pixar. So definitely go check out Hoppers. Let's talk about some Oscars here. Not a ton of news or trailers. One big trailer I do want to talk about. But let's talk about the Oscars really quickly here. We will have a full, I think we might do a gambling preview. We still got to decide if we're going to do that or not. I think we are. But we're definitely going to have our breakdown of everything that happens after the Oscars airs on the 15th of March. The episode will be out on the 16th. But we will have our reaction from right after the fact.
I believe Ken Jagucci and I are going to be watching them together.
Yeah, we'll be watching them at the office. So that way, you know, we're all together and can just and record. Yeah. We'll probably be posting some reactions too. So stay tuned for that.
The picture race is close. How close? We don't know. There's a very interesting combination of wins that One Battle and Sinners are going to go into the Oscars with. You're going to have the DGA, the DGA, the PGA, the ACE, as well as the DGA, PGA, ACE, and WGA for One Battle. That combination has never lost Best Picture. On the other hand, Sinners is also going to have some things as well. SAG, ACE, WGA, their combo has also never lost Best Picture. I would, to put it into football terms, I was trying to think about the best way to give it like an interesting kind of juxtaposition here. I would say One Battle was probably on the 1 yard line first and goal before the SAG. And then Sinners won the best ensemble, which is not a great indicator for Best Picture. It's just not. It's an indicator, but it's not a great one. One Battle has the better indicators. And then Michael B. Jordan won Best Actor. And there was just an energy in that room, if you watch the SAG, that felt very similar to Parasite. Now, I will say this. Parasite was going up against 1917. 1917 is not on the same planet as One Battle in terms of how people have received it. I think 1917 felt like a very shaky king on the throne going into the Oscars, where I don't think that's the case with One Battle at all. Very similar, though, in terms of what 1917 won and what One Battle won and what Sinners won and what Parasite won. But I would say the ground that One Battle stands on is much firmer. So I think they were first in goal, and now they're second in goal, and like they had like a intentional grounding, and it's like second in goal from like the eight. Like I think like they're still probably going to score. They're still probably going to win, but you have to take Sinners a little more seriously as the Best Picture nominee than maybe a week ago. Honestly, when we recorded, it was 12 hours after One Battle won the PGA. The PGA has basically redone their award show over time, where it's this humongous pool. It's the same voting system as the Oscar. It's a huge pool of influential people. And to put it from our buddy over at awards.substack.com, Walt Hickey, was a great algorithm to kind of rank all of the nominees. Right now, Sinners is right behind One Battle. It looks very similar again to the Parasite 1917 year. He said that the PGA cares more about predicting the Oscars than it does handing out an award. And that's probably the best way to put the PGA. But you do have to take Sinners seriously. And I think the Michael B. Jordan thing probably gives me more of a tip than the ensemble, because many people thought it was going to win ensemble anyway. So that's the Best Picture race. I think it's up in the air. I think if you think Sinners is going to win, that's a very interesting and solid prediction. But I there's no way to really say anything other than the fact that One Battle is a favorite. It's minus 500 on DraftKings. I don't look into the predictive markets, other websites I won't name. I think those are not good ways to figure out who's going to win a award show. Because it's just based on who is betting. It's all, so I don't care about any of those websites. I'll just say what the DraftKings odds are now, which factors in a lot of historical stuff, et cetera, with their lines. Minus 500, Sinners plus 330, nothing else has a chance. It's over for everyone else.
I have a question for you, Jeff, after that. I have a question for you about Best Picture. Do you think what happened at the BAFTAs, where you had someone with Tourette's yell out a racial slur at Michael B. Jordan and Delroy Lindo, and that seemed to kind of, is that a tipping point, or is that just kind of a false narrative where people are like, all right, like obviously that really stinks what they had to go through dealing with that. That's an awful situation. It's weird. It's awkward. It's that's terrible. I felt like after that happened, we did see kind of a shift in Sinners, or is that just a false narrative?
Well, let's also remember, the Oscar, so I saw another thing too. This year, in terms of when you vote for the Oscars, you do have to put a, like, apparently you have to like do a check or something that you've seen the movie. Now, it doesn't require you to see it, but I was reading that some people are now feeling more shame when they don't see something and they vote. And it's like an honor system thing. Voting also only ended on Thursday. So there's this whole thing that many people didn't vote until after the SAG. That the voting window was already barely open, and it was open for the rest of the week for the most part. And it didn't really finish until Thursday. So I Clemmer, I don't think that's at all a crazy thing to say. I think that very well could have been a factor. And I think watching Miles Caton go up and perform at the SAG and the energy in the room, the way Viola Davis announced Michael B. Jordan, the way that Samuel Jackson announced Sinners, like it can't be discounted. And there's obviously a huge cultural push behind Sinners. A huge one. And the voting pool for the Academy is very diverse. It's very large. So I wouldn't discount that at all either. I wouldn't. In terms of actor and actress, best actress is over. Shout out Jesse Buckley from The Bride. I do wonder if they'll make fun of The Bride at all during the Cohen's opening monologue. It does seem very timely.
Did you see that one guy that said it to Bale's face and like at one of the premieres? Did you see that video?
No.
Oh, I'll send it to you guys. It's so funny. Like, the guy's like talking to Bale. He's like, I don't care what they said. You guys did great. And he's like, Bale's like, what are they saying? He's like, it's the worst movie of all time.
She's minus 3,500 on DraftKings. She is. There's no locks in the game of gambling, betting, bet responsibly. But she is. That don't even look at that race. it's over. Best actor is the big interesting one. Michael B. Jordan is actually, as of me refreshing this page 30 seconds ago on Sunday, March 8th at 2:41 p.m., Michael B. Jordan is now the betting favorite. He was not only started recording this, he's now the betting favorite at minus 110. Timothée Chalamet is plus 110. The actor race is very strange. You have Michael B. Jordan, according to algorithms, and again, our guy over awards.substack.com, he has the big indicator, the SAG. Timothée Chalamet doesn't have anything else. He won the Critics' Choice. It's not a huge indicator at all. Wagner Moura won the Golden Globe Drama, which has become more of an indicator. There's no real way to separate it. The BAFTA comedy doesn't indicate anything. What Chalamet won. So it's and you have this BAFTA, which went to a guy who's not going to be nominated until 2027. So the only other award, I wish they would just say who came in second at the BAFTAs. That'd make this so much easier. If we just know who came in second place, because then you would know. It's very crazy. Like, no matter who wins, Jordan or Chalamet, you're going to have historical markers that get knocked down, because Michael Jordan really didn't win much of anything until the SAG. Chalamet has been the favorite, but hasn't won any indicators. So this is, I've been asked by a bunch of people in like DMs and stuff. I have no idea. I'm going to say Michael B. Jordan right now based on sentiment. That's about it. That's like kind of all you can go off of. Chalamet's campaign has fallen apart. It is kind of crazy. And now people are going after him about a bunch of shit he said. And it's kind of crazy. So they're going after Chalamet.
I want to talk about that real quick, Jeff, because you're good about the timeline. You said the voting ended when? Thursday?
Yeah. Yeah. It's insane.
Okay. So now we see that Chalamet said basically kind of shit on opera and ballet, saying nobody cares about it. And you're seeing kind of a backlash about that. But when did he say those comments? Because the backlash, I feel like, is too late for it to affect the Oscars, which voted ending on Thursday.
He said it a month and a half ago. It was part of this
got picked up.
Town hall.
Yeah, it didn't seem to pop until after the. Yeah,
it's very clearly
okay. It didn't seem to really blow up until after voting was over. So I don't think that's going to affect voting at all. Or maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, I guess you are right, because it really didn't blow up until probably Friday, Saturday.
There's also this other thing with Chalamet, that there's this whole obsession that the SAG doesn't not give people back-to-back awards, which there's a small caveat for that for me, and that's the fact that how often is that a possibility? It's not like every year somebody has a chance to go back to back. But people said that doesn't happen. Guess what? It didn't happen. So yeah, I mean, it's interesting to say the least. I mean, again, you can look at the indicators any way you want. I mean, again, people have said the same thing about picture, right? It's like the PGA has been an indicator, but in recent memory, it's like the PGA has only been around since 1990, I think. I might be wrong on the dates. It's like 1990-ish. Like, it still missed the mark a couple times. It's like all but 10 times in 30 years is still not, that's still not 100%. That's not 90%. So that's the same case with the acting thing, with the SAG. It is an indicator, but I think the write-up that I read from Walt Hickey was, he said that 85% accuracy number, you could argue, is deceptive for the SAG thing, because in its 10-year accuracy, it's just 70% that the SAG winner wins Best Actor of the Oscar. So I think there's anyone telling you that they know either side on Chalamet, Jordan, is just full of shit. It's a toss-up. It's a coin flip. There's no other way to look at it. It's that guy winning the BAFTA. What's his face from fucking Game of Thrones? What's his name?
What, Stark guy?
Why am I forgetting it? Why can't I?
About the guy that
Robert
Aramayo, right? Or something. Yeah.
Which he's going to be nominated for an Oscar next year. Which, by the way, my question next year is going to be: do we count last year's BAFTA when predicting next year's Oscar if that guy gets nominated? How does that work? Like, that's crazy. And then the two supporting, it seems like Sean Gunn.
Sean Gunn, yeah.
Seems like Sean Gunn. So it seems like Sean Penn is going to probably win. He's minus 350. He's made a late surge. It's worth noting that the international, that's the other thing too, the international, Wagner Moura, Stellan Skarsgård, not nominated at the SAG. The SAG's really a more of a national award. They're not nominated. Could Delroy Lindo shock? I doubt it. I highly doubt it. Delroy Lindo has won nothing. When you look at like the, everyone's got a little something. He's got no nominations, no wins, whatever. But I've heard people say, like, could Lindo upset? Delroy Lindo upsetting supporting actor, even though he's only plus 700, would be the craziest upset of any acting thing ever, because he has zero anything indicators. When you look at, like, the list of, like, what, like, the numbers, when people, like, add up the points that people have won an award season, Lindo has literally zero. So that'd be crazy. Penn is the favorite. I think if you're betting on the Oscars on DraftKings, Stellan Skarsgård at plus 400, pretty great odds. Why not take a swing? Because he's got some indicators, won some stuff, but the Penn momentum is pretty hard to deny. And then the best race, supporting actress, nobody is better than plus 125. Amy Madigan wins the SAG. She did the weapons run on the stage. So that was awesome. Fucking awesome. We mentioned last week that if Madigan wins the SAG, that's the greatest race for an acting award in ages. Masako, she won the BAFTA. Tiana Taylor won at the Globes. Amy Madigan wins SAG. She's the favorite. It's plus 125, plus 150, plus 225. Madigan, Taylor, and Masako. So anyway, long-winded kind of breakdown there for you if you're curious on where the odds stand. But there's picture. I think it leans one battle. You can maybe toss in Sinners. Clearly Jesse Buckley. Then the other stuff is, except for Sean Penn, though, you could still argue an upset. It's great. They're great races. Finally. Like, we go into these years and it's like this inevitable, like, okay, they're going to stand up and make the speech. And now you don't know. So, yeah, very, very fun Oscars ahead. Very excited. Very, very excited.
Where are we with director?
I feel like it's got to be PTA.
It's going to be PTA, but here's my one note on that. If you fall into the theory that Sinners is going to have this surge and is going to win Best Picture and do what Parasite did, you kind of have to put on the table that Coogler could win Best Director. Again, super, like 5%. Right? Okay. Like Ken Jack, I remember watching that in The Office when Bong Joon-ho wins. If you compare Coogler versus PTA to Sam Mendes versus Bong Joon-ho, same exact metrics going to the Oscars. They've won the same stuff, lost the same stuff, nominated for the same stuff. So I think if you buy into the theory that Sinners is going to have this surge and win Best Picture, you have to at least entertain the idea that Coogler could stun. And I've seen some people say, and this is very fair, Sam Mendes had won an Oscar already. So that was a big part of it. Mm-hmm. The funny thing is, it appeared like PTA hasn't. PTA and Coogler are going to win Oscars minutes before this Best Director is announced. They're both going to win Best Screenplay. They're both going to win their first Oscar, and then they're going to have Best Director. I think it's going to be closer. Right now, PTA is minus 2,500. I think that's actually gone down. Coogler's only plus 800. I thought it'd be kind of higher than that. again, not take a stab at it. If you buy into the Sinner's hype, yeah, take a stab at Coogler plus
what,
800.
Okay.
What does a Sinner's landslide look like?
Say it again.
What is the cap? What is the cap for like a Sinner's landslide above the line? Like what? How many Oscars could they possibly win here? If it starts like Woodman Misako gets up there, first award of the night wins. Like what does that look like from there?
It's going to win a lot of technical stuff. It's going to win all the music stuff, obviously, right? It's going to win score. It's going to win, actually, not all the music stuff, because that song is obviously K-pop Demon Hunter, which is going to be the fucking moment of the night, by the way. Just a heads up. for those wondering, that's going to be the big ticket item. It's tough to say, but I think if she wins, then it's like, okay, put it on the table. Like, I think Lindo's not going to win, but I think, okay, Michael B. Jordan, then they're going to win screenplay. You're going to win score. You might sneak in, yeah, cinematography. They're apparently the favorite for cast, though nobody knows what the fuck that award is. So I don't know. I mean, it could start to stack it up and pile it up. And then if it goes on that run, then yeah, you know, you could see B. Jordan, you could see Misaki, you could see Coogler win, which would be a shock. And obviously, if Coogler wins director, it's winning Best Picture. Though that is still like we're more likely to get Sinners and PTA than we are Sinners and Coogler, but. It's a very interesting and compelling night for movie award show dorks, basically. It should be very interesting. I'm very excited for it. To get close races is such a like sigh of relief. Like, thank God. Like, finally. Like, usually it's just like such a shoo-in. And The Bride. The Bride's own, Jesse Buckley, gonna win Best Actress. So yeah, that's the Oscars. Very excited. Love the whole breakdown and everything. I think Kirk's gonna join us, like I said, for that as well. News. Scream 7 fell off a fucking cliff at the box office. 70% drop, Clemmer. Did you see that?
I did. But I mean, still over 90 million. Did okay during the week. I mean, these movies are going to fall off quick, horror, sequel. But I'm guessing they're still really happy with the overall
take. Yeah, I would say word of mouth, not great.
No.
For Scream 7.
If you walk away, this is going to finish with what, 110 domestic? Something like that, yeah. 120 domestic. You take that.
Maybe if it was good though, this thing would have fucking blown up.
Yes, I agree.
And then National Treasure 3 apparently coming along quite well from Jerry Bruckheimer. I never believe the National Treasure 3 stuff because it's always like there's a rumor every month. It feels like, but apparently it's coming along and it's going to happen. It better be about the book. Would you hate the movie if it's not about what's in the Book of Secrets? Like I feel like that's. How can you not do the Book of Secrets?
Page 47.
I don't know.
Would be wait, say it again.
Also, page 47. Did Nick Cage not say that he like would not work with Disney again? Was that not something he said like 5 years ago that he just like will not work with Disney ever again?
Whatever happened? They did that. They did a National Treasure series, right? Like with kids something, and nobody watched it.
It's awful.
Yeah, makes sense.
I mean, it's like that's one of those crazy things. Like, why are we doing this? Like, what?
Why? Why are we not doing these movies? Why are we not doing it? Like, this is it's so weird that this has been so hard to get off the ground because people love those first two movies.
Yeah,
the first one is like probably one of the most rewatched movies of the 21st century. And you had to like poll people on movies that they have rewatched in their lives. That would be in the top 10.
And it's not like a difficult ask either, like lift-wise, because it's not like Cage was some super mega action hero. Like, how could he possibly keep doing this crazy physicality? It's not the case.
He does
like,
seven movies a year.
Exactly. Well, like, I mean, it's not like a specifically physical role, you know? Like, he can just keep doing these. Like, he can come back late and do it. So, I don't know why he wouldn't.
Justin Barth is not doing shit.
He was on a really funny guest spot in the other two, man. I got to send that to you guys. It was so funny.
What if the Barth is the main focus this next one?
Fuck, is the villain? What's his name in? Is he Doug in The Hangover? What's his name?
Yeah, Doug.
Yeah, yeah. Song. White Doug, Doug, Black Doug.
Doug.
And then trailers, Lanterns. This kind of caused quite the stir. Though I think all four of us really like this trailer. Shout out our good buddy Robbie Fox. He did mention. I know he said like Green Lantern comic book nerds are like really tough to please. So they did not like the style of this. Created by Chris Mundy and Damon Lindelof. Lost fame. Oh, we'll be talking about Lost in about 5 minutes, by the way. And obviously Watchmen HBO, which if you do, if doing Watchmen HBO creates like the greatest amount of goodwill ever for me to trust you on doing a comic book project. Stars Kyle Chandler and Aaron Pierre. Green Lanterns. The series follows experienced Lantern Hal Jordan and new recruit John Stewart as they investigate a murder in Nebraska, which leads them to darker mysteries and reckonings. Obviously, very stripped down. I would say very, feels very much like Watch, the Watchmen, like HBO in terms of like grounded, real world kind of look and feel. I thought this looked fucking awesome. I don't know. Like, I don't know.
Where's the green, Jeff? Where's the green?
There's no green. Where's my
green? Oh, and then he said that. And then he said in an interview, like Lindelof made a joke, like, I dropped green from green, like the title, because I thought it was stupid, like as a joke. And people took that and run. They ran with it. They were pissed.
So dumb. I mean, everything about this, like, you can't. Maybe it's just the Lanterns comic book fans are mad because of how the character's been treated over the years. But like, you can't look at this on paper and not get excited. I mean, like you mentioned, Lindelof, Chris Mundy, who did Ozark, Criminal Minds. This crew is incredible. Like, Aaron Pierre is like just in Rebel Ridge, was so good. Philly and Kelly McDonald, who was really good in Boardwalk Empire, by the way. I wish more people would have watched that show. Garrett Dillahun, Ulrich Thompson, who's amazing in Banshee. Like, there's so many good components to this show that I don't know why you wouldn't be excited as a Green Lantern fan. Like, did you just expect it to be they're gonna spend Secret Invasion money on just having them blowing shit up in space and just redo all the mistakes of the Ryan Reynolds version? No, like, do something cool and different. That's what I think specifically has helped put DC so far ahead of Marvel in the TV world. At least, well, Wonder Man notwithstanding. But like, when you look at something like Peacemaker, it was just different. And that was good. That was a good thing. So, I don't know. Trust the process a little bit, guys. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, agreed.
I'm a DC guy. I would say I'm a casual Green Lantern guy, but this is the kind of Green Lantern stuff I want. Like, Kyle Chandler is Hal Jordan. That's great casting. And, like, this looks fantastic. I'm really excited for this. August, I'm there. I'm ready to go.
Mm-hmm. No. Lanterns fan, the Green Lantern fans, the comic book fans are... They're like the Kobe fans of like DC readers. Like, they're like, Superman's cool and Batman's cool, but have you seen the Lanterns? Have you read Lanterns? Like, they're so weird, and like, because they've never gotten a good adaptation ever. But like, this could be the one. Just get behind it. Be excited about like the fact that you have a massive project on the table with great people working on it. Like, get excited about that. Don't nitpick the fucking trailer. At least give it an episode.
Right, yeah. Give it a chance. Give it a
also, like, Aaron Pierre is maybe terrible. Like, that's crazy that he just fell in their lap. Maybe the like the most perfect person to ever play John Stewart. Like,
yeah, perfect. Like, literally, like, built in a lab to play that character. Like, it's crazy. Exactly.
And so Kyle Chandler is a perfect Hal Jordan. I'm really that trailer. Yeah. I was like, this is. There's not too many shows I'm looking forward to, period, more than this.
Hey, and Fillion's going to be in this too. And Fillion was a good guy, Gardner. Like, everything about it was like, oh, fucking crazy. Losers, man.
Also, you can't do, like, this is a television series. If they went heavy on CGI and did the fantastical stuff, it would look terrible because you're like working shit on a TV budget. Like, even if they're given $40 million an episode, that's not enough to pull off, like, a full, like, the constructs and, like, a full space series. Like, that's just not feasible at this point in time. They did a movie that it could be more fantastical.
The most expensive superhero to put on
big screen. Time
because of what his powers are. Like, it's so hard to do Green Lantern, like, especially in a TV, like I said, budget. Like, this looks, let's just, I can't believe there's any like discontent about this. This looks fantastic. I don't know. Mm-hmm. What do I know?
The Boys, Beef Season 2, trailer for the Testament, Handmaid's Tale spinoff featuring Chase Infinity. Any thoughts on those? I know Ken Jack, big Boys guy. No, that sounds wrong. The Boys.
But still true.
I love Boys. You ever see I think it's a good Kurt Angle clip. He's like, I'm a man and you're a boy, and I love playing with little boys. What do you call it? But yeah, the Boys, I mean, it's, we've talked about it before, even recently with I forgot what movie we're reviewing that I compared it to, but like, it's kind of in self-parody territory right now. But I don't know, maybe they sign off well. They knew it was their last season, so maybe they'll have a little bit more juice in it. I think they had to like delay for a long time for Jensen Ackles or something, right? You might know better, Cooch. I think they had to delay filming for a while.
I don't know what he's doing.
Yeah, he had something where they had to push it back. I remember reading that. But yeah, they have that. And then I don't know. I don't really follow enough of Handmaid's Tale. Like, I've tried it a bunch of times and fell off of it. But I mean, Chase Infinity will be there. I will be there. So I will be watching. We'll be checking it out.
So fucking good at the SAGs. Oh, gorgeous. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is the slew of trailers, mostly TV stuff. I'll talk about what we're watching. I'm going to start off with one again, Paradise. We didn't mention this last week, Ken Jack, with Paradise. Clemmer as well. I actually didn't really hate the last episode. I thought there was like a nice emotional swing there, though. Again, nothing I'm not going to sit here and say was elite TV. This is not a spoiler, by the way. I don't know this for a fact. I think if you read the tea leaves, it's pretty clear. It's a fucking time travel show.
Yeah.
They're gonna pull some Lost shit. There's gonna be some sort of time paradox and time travel in the show. Which I guess it's a sci-fi show, so great. That makes like for sure, whatever. Like it's not like this is some grounded drama that all of a sudden just pulls it out. Like I get it. Like it can work. The reaction when this
kind of supernatural show. Like this is now they're having dreams, like Mother Abigail Stan type dreams here. Like, what are you doing?
Visions and shit now. This show is there's a large contingent of people who really like this show, but there's going to be a large contingent of people who like this show. And when they travel in time, they're going to be like, what the fuck is this? And I cannot wait. I wish instead of watching the show, I could watch a screening room of 100 people watch the show. Like I want to see reactions whenever the fuck that happens. I don't even know what to make this. This is one of the most bizarre shows to ever come out in the last 15, 20 years. Like it's a strange show and it has a pretty big following. And I think it's going to piss off most people who watch the show. And I can't wait. I cannot wait.
It's crazy too. Cause it's the last season has two of like my favorite episodes of TV in like the last 5 years. So, so good. And again, it was flawed. Like there was problems in the last season. Like this one, it's just, what the fuck are we doing? And like, I feel like there is still a chance. Cause like, you could even say that sort of with, the penultimate episode of the last season, because like there was a pretty big dip going into that, like, but you need a seriously insane episode to kind of rebound, at least to me at this point.
I'll be honest, I've never watched this show, never taken the dive or gotten involved with that, but the way you guys have been talking about it lately, this is now I kind of want to watch.
You have to, now should. I want to watch. It's batshit enough that it's worth watching, because first off, it is an easy watch. Like it's not like you have to go through like 10 seasons. But they do something. First off, the number one reason to watch this show, the number one reason, is the cover songs of popular music that they play. The needle drops are they've never played a regular song in this show. It's always a cover. There is a cover of Elvis Presley in this show in the last episode. I won't say why. There's multiple. Where it all of a sudden, it's a slow guitar to me here. You ain't nothing. But a hound dog.
Shut
up. It's the worst cover of a song I've ever
immediately
heard.
Texted the group. I was like, you just wait. I go, it's in the first. I put in our Discord. I'm like, the first 5 minutes of the episode, there is a needle drop, which is unbelievable. I was howling laughing. It was so fucking funny.
Like light piano and acoustic guitar cover of Hound Dog. It was one of the worst things I've ever heard in my entire life. And they're playing it like it's a pretty serious moment.
You're gonna see.
Like, yeah. It's fucking insane.
I was trying to think. I want like Backstreet Boys or NSYNC. Like I want something like, like just like the strum, like back.
Do like fucking paper playing.
Like I want like or... I want like bullshit, like real bullshit. But like they're capable of it.
It's insane. And you know the weird thing too that annoys me about the needle drops is like their actual original soundtrack is really good. Like their actual soundtrack is great. But then the songs that they have put into it are terrible.
The score is excellent in that show. There is that the theme song that they always play. I like a lot. It's a good mood setter.
Good.
Like I do think it's a great scene transition song. If they play like Back in Time by Huey Lewis in the News, like slowed down whenever they time travel, I'll give the show 100 out of 100. it's the best part of the show. And it happens. This is not like a thing. Like it happens. Clockwork every single episode, and every episode ends with a cover. For the most part, it's just unbelievable. It's the funniest thing I've ever seen in a show. It's so great. It's so weird.
We gotta get you watching it, Gooch.
I mean, can I just not afford it? You know, when you go to like a coffee shop and like they can't play any of the music, so you just hear like all these shitty covers.
That's basically what it's insane. Memory of a Killer on Fox, still one of the big pile of shits I've ever seen in my life. If you're a Sopranos fan, just watch it. It's the worst miscast of anything I've ever seen. Poor Patrick Dempsey. And then love story, JFK Jr. Phenomenon, by the way. This show is, it's Hulu's biggest streaming show ever, apparently. Disney Plus. It's, I applaud Ryan Murphy. He found the worst actor imaginable to play JFK Jr., but it just fucking works. I don't know why. I don't, every, like, every place they go to in New York is apparently lying out the door now. Like, it's crazy. Like, this show is, he's, it, I'm not saying it's People versus OJ level, but, like, he definitely found the mark. And again, I'll keep, every time we talk about the show, I'm going to say it again. What a whiff on the Monica Lewinsky, Bill Clinton show. Like, talk about not knowing what type of show, like, someone must have gotten Ryan Murphy's ear finally been like, dude, you make trash. Just make trash. Make colorful, bright, smut trash. And that's what he did with this show. And I guess I'm not the only one. People can't get enough of this show. And also, he's definitely not going to be Batman now. He's just way too bad in this show. There's no way anyone will ever give this guy the role of Bruce Wayne. He's so bad.
That's going to Sklenar. That's a lost cause already, because that's Sklenar's job.
Sklenar.
But what I am actually very excited for, they showed some shots on the...
Get Sklenarded.
They showed some shots of the set for the Fassbender one, the Kennedy show, which, like, I'm actually very excited about that, where he's playing JFK's dad. That, I think, is going to be excellent.
Can you... So I was... I was talking to Kirk about this the other day. Kirk's a huge The Crown, like, the least bingeable show of all time, The Crown. Like, it's like wading through 6 feet of mud. Like, it's so British. It's so... You can taste the fucking... You can just taste how British... It's just like, oh, God.
It's the same people, yeah.
Vegemite. Do they eat Vegemite? No, they eat Marmite.
No, that's Aussies.
No, it's Australia.
Yeah, it's Australia. They eat some bullshit on toast. And
beans on toast. That's their thing.
Beans and ass, whatever it is. Can the Kennedy show be as... Like, it can be definitely regal, because, right, Camelot, and, like, obviously, like, look, watch Love Story. Like, just watch the way, like, Jackie O is in that show and everything. Naomi Watts, terrible performance. It's amazing. Can the Kennedy version of The Crown be the same vibe as The Crown? Like, would that work, you think, for an American story? Even though the Kennedy family is obviously very, it's American royalty, but I don't think it can be the same vibe as The Crown, right?
I actually think it'll be more interesting, because, like, the royal family, like, what counts as a scandal for the royal family is, like, a regular Tuesday for the Kennedy family. Like, it's right. Like, it's nothing. Yeah. Like, they had full episodes, like, wearing around, like boarding around, like, this lady wore the wrong dress to a party. Like, that's the biggest scandal. And then
Ted Kennedy, like, you could argue, killed a girl.
Not even argued. Like, Ted Kennedy killed a girl.
The Kennedys.
And
they lobotomized his daughter.
They lobotomized the daughter. Yes. JFK, Joe Kennedy, like, bought an election for a son. Like, there were criminals. They were aiding the Nazis because they thought that it would help Ireland. Like, they were not, there's crazy shit going on with the Kennedy family. So I think it's going to be way more interesting to talk about them than it is about the royal family, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm very excited for that one as well. Yeah. Also, did you ever watch Industry?
I never got past the first season, but I did like the first season.
Yeah, I'm trying to make sure I get through everything, because people have loved this recent season. And then only one physical media for me. I got End of Watch.
Banger.
Great movie.
Version of what's his name? David Ayer. Where's that David Ayer?
He just did.
Another Statham movie. Bullshit thing. Like, fucking make a real movie again.
I also had to make a. Let's see. Wait, wrong way. I had to add a fucking shelf. Not great. This is how you know you have a problem, when you got to add another shelf. But the Criterion's got too many banger releases happening right now. What am I supposed to do? And I think the next drop's going to be Friday. I think that's going to be the K-pop Demon Hunters official announcement. Oscar winner K-pop Demon Hunters.
This is my only release. I got Volume 2 of Jackie Chan collection. These movies they do stunts in these movies that you would get exiled from Hollywood for trying now. Like, the stuntmen are treated with such little safety or regard. Like, it is insane human feats watching some of these things. It's so fucking cool. I love them. And they're very funny, too, on top of all that.
Howard the Duck. This is the movie Robbie Fox and I covered on Super Critics. You can check that out right now. This is also not the last time we're going to talk about Howard Duck on this episode of this show.
Also, for those who want the Titanic in 4K, Titanic on deepdiscount.com. is 90% off the 25th anniversary collector's edition. 90% off. You can get it for $20 on deepdiscount.com. So go check that out if you like Titanic. I just saw that in our Discord. We have a great physical media lounge that's called in the the Film Crew Discord, which is an offshoot of what used to be Lights, Camera, Barstool Discord. So go check that out. Get some good deals in there. Howard the Duck is...
Have you ever seen Jeff, the guy that collects every copy of the VHS of Titanic?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
that
yeah.
Guy.
What a legend.
He has like 9,000 copies.
Yeah.
I don't blame him.
Oh, my God.
It's crazy.
Titanic, anything else? The behind the scenes on that is incredible.
Yeah.
That has some of the best bonus features of any Blu-ray I own. It's really, really good. If you don't have a copy of that, even if you don't love the movie, the behind the scenes is fucking unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't watching any TV this week, but I will throw out a movie rec for people who love TV, specifically Veep and Succession. I watched Jesse Armstrong in Armando Iannucci's 2009 movie In the Loop, which is basically a British, an extended British episode of Veep. And it is really, really good. It's on Mubi right now, which is worth the ad. At least a free trial, you can check it out. They don't have a lot of stuff, but I loved it. Really, really good.
What's he up to right now, by the way? Speaking of him, that's a great, great poll, by the way. What has he been up to? Because I feel like I haven't heard him doing anything lately.
I don't know. That's a good question.
You got nothing coming up. What the fuck, dude? What's he doing?
I need him to just like make a bunch of those like kind of Death of Stalin type movies. Like, I could use like four of those.
Yeah.
He did the remake of Force Majeure, right? Did Downhill, right?
He directed that?
He did that?
I thought he did.
Oh.
That I would not have expected that, because that movie was a pile of garbage.
Yeah.
I could be wrong on that. I thought he was involved in that. I could be dead wrong on that. He did something recently that was not good. That's all I know.
The Personal History of David Copperfield is the last thing I see that he did, which is also not like some banger thing, but it's also not as bad.
Okay,
as...
so no, he did. He didn't. I apologize to him. He did not do that piece of shit movie. Terrible, unnecessary. Oh, he did. I know what he did. He did that weird show that nobody watched. Avenue 5, the space show.
Oh, I was gonna say.
Also, yeah, you're right, Kendrick. He did do The Studio. Forgot about that.
Franchise. The Studio was good.
The franchise. Sorry. Though. Yeah. The franchise. Yep. Which was
franchise kind of got an unfortunate. also, the studio did not help the franchise. That was not.
Yeah. No.
Did it no favors. I will say I'm starting a rewatch of Silicon Valley.
I gotta restart.
I've never seen it before, which is I mean, just so the Peter Gregory character alone might be, rest in peace, he passed away, but he is fucking so funny. Him introducing Flo Rida, he comes in like, thank you, Florida. And just like the way his inflection, everything is just so, that show is unbelievable.
The scene where he like talks so to the guys funny. About like the sesame seeds or whatever is so fucking good. Like there's so many great scenes in that.
There's what's his face from Superstore plays Ron LaFlamme. Oh.
Ron LaFlamme.
I don't
lawyer,
even think about
you.
What's his name?
Damn. Yeah, it's Ben Feldman. Ben Feldman.
Yeah. There it is.
And Peter Gregory says, he's like, I got an email from Ron LaFlamme. And just the way that show just got great. That show's got great names. Anyway, yeah, Silicon Valley. Great show.
Jin Yang.
So in honor of The Bride, we're doing top 10. What the fuck did I just watch movies? WTF did I just watch movies for the just want to be a little more PG-13. It goes Ken Jack, Clemmer, Gooch, then myself. Then myself, Gooch, Clemmer, Ken Jack. Then Clemmer and Gooch have the extra picks this week. So let's define this. Can you include movies that are good?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think this can be a mix of like, what the fuck did I just watch that was terrible, and also what the fuck did I just watch that was good, but I don't even know what I just saw. Right? I feel like it can be.
This isn't
the
worst movies ever. This is just what the fuck did I just watch?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Ken Jack, you have the first pick.
I think with my first pick, this is one where I generally had that feeling, that sentiment, and it is in a negative light, though, and it was Dragon Ball Evolution. That is a movie I watched, and if you were a kid and you were watching Dragon Ball Z, and you were like, wow, they're making a Dragon Ball Z movie, this is gonna be awesome, and that was, I know what you said, doesn't have to be bad, this was one of the biggest piles of shit I've ever watched in my entire life. One of the truly worst and diabolically evil things ever put to screen, and what was that kid's name, is it Chatwin, the kid... So you would know, I would assume you never haven't seen this one, Clemmer, because it was...
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Exactly. So do you remember the really annoying teen son from War of the Worlds?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They basically had him playing Goku, who's like the most beloved anime character of all time. and it was just a complete and utter dog shit. And I remember leaving that theater being very excited about it as a kid and just like, man, that was a humongous pile. So I would put that up there. And the feeling was just because, like, you didn't necessarily know what to expect, because at least in the West, you don't see live-action anime adaptations. You see things that rip shit off, like Aronofsky does, or like even like Nolan does, whatever. But you don't see a one-to-one, and when you see it, you don't know what to expect. And, man, I left that movie theater so fucking mad, and I got to put it up there.
That was on my list. It's fucking terrible.
It was real, because I can't believe it's going to be, like, number one on this list.
If you watched it, I think you would throw up. Like, you would actually die, I think, if you watched it.
It was so bad that people were making, like, I can remember this vividly, because I was so mad, like you were, Ken Jack, and they were like, GoFundMes before GoFundMe, like, to make a different movie from, like, YouTubers in early YouTube days. And they could make stuff with, like, $10,000 off of, like, donations that was better than this movie. So, like, these early YouTubers could make a better quality film than what... Who made the movie? I can't even remember.
The
DB Evolution was. It was so bad.
So to give you some, maybe like a little bit of clarity on this one, Clever, like the character Goku, like this was such a big character that when the guy that created Goku died, the cartel had a peace treaty in effect for a week. Like, this is how, like, they were mourning this, the guy that made this, when he died, all over the world. Like, this is a humongous, this is how
you
big
think
this
be like on like people who. It, like in this country, who like follow this show, are they going to be like, why the fuck is that number one on this list? Or is that going to be like, oh, that makes sense?
I think people
I think men under the age of 35 or 40.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was on Gucci's list as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's terrible. Very similar one of my list I've ever seen in my life. It's a 2 out of 100 for me. I mean, it's a terrible, terrible movie.
So fucking bad. Still pissed about it years later.
Yeah. It's quite unbelievable. Next pick, Clemmer.
Yeah, this isn't even a bad movie. This is actually a movie I slightly recommend. But I've never had an experience where I was more like, what just happened than when I saw Mother.
oh, great pick.
That was just like, what was that? Like,
my brain. Just like The Bride.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Lowercase Mother, exclamation point. Yes. I'm going to say it. I mean, they rip a baby apart. Like, it's a, what's happening? And then they eat it. And that's just one of many strange things happening in this movie. And this movie, I feel like is more in the vein of The Bride. It was better than The Bride, in my opinion. It's just like, just weird as fuck. Nothing really makes sense, but it did give me a lot to think about. And I kind of appreciate Mother. But Mother is the weirdest experience I ever had in a movie theater.
That is, by the way, I'm surprised we didn't bring that up. That is a good comp even for The Bride in a lot of different ways. Like, just top of the world actors being thrown in this movie with like a pretty decent director and just, oh, there's nothing
that
happening.
Really doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But there you go, Mother.
Yeah, that's a very good pick. I'd have my list. I should have been. Gooch, you have number 3.
I mean, I think this list would be incomplete if we did not have The Room on it, which is like the low hanging fruit, but it really is just, it makes no sense. It's, everything is so unnatural. Every line delivery, every camera angle, every set, every narrative choice is so uncanny in a way that I cannot. It's one of those movies that it came out, what, 97? It feels like it was made by AI. Like, it really does.
Yeah.
And there is a quality to it that's just so out there, and it's been able to last for this long because of that. Like, they made a movie that won Golden Globes about the production of the movie. It's so out there. And I have the copy right behind me. I respect it. I respect how absurd that movie is, but it makes no fucking sense. Like, just everything that comes out of that man's mouth. Hey, doggy.
I did not hit her. Why? It's so funny, yeah. Dude. It's so, what's the thing? Like, the people go and watch the screens and they throw spoons at the
yep, theater. Yeah, throw spoons.
It's cool. And like, yeah, and it's even like a better, I think a great pick for this list too, because like, it's not like a hated movie, it's just like a fever dream. It's like, there's no way this was released and created, and like, how did this happen? Like, it is, I think, a perfect pick for this sort of draft.
Yeah.
I thought this would be Ken Jack's number one when I'm doing it for, and that's Serenity, aka Dad Boat.
It was on my list.
McConaughey. Yes. It is also Anne Hathaway. We interviewed Jaimin Hansu, who's in the movie. And we asked him about the movie, and he's like, I don't understand any of that fucking.
He just started laughing.
What the movie's about. It's just like
Serenity, and he just started laughing.
Yeah, I mean, just like the, I mean, basically using the a computer to have a character sleep with your mom. It's absurd. It's the most absurd shit I've ever watched. In terms of like just stupid shit that doesn't make any sense. Like this would be my number one. This would be 1-1 for me. Like it literally, in terms of what the fuck that I just watched, like this is up there. I remember watching this and just baffled by what I'd seen. So a bad one for me, a number 4, Serenity, aka Dad Boat. 5 is a good movie to me. He's got a movie coming out soon, and that's Boots Riley's Sorry to Bother You. I love Sorry to Bother You, but I'd be lying to you if I said I didn't leave that movie going, what the hell just happened? Has an incredible twist ending, pulls no punches, goes for it, I think takes a lot of swings and lands them all. I also love Lakeith Stanfield. I think Lakeith Stanfield is one of our more underappreciated actors of the last decade or so. Sorry to Bother You is just a wild ride that has an ending that probably, if you made the movie 100 times, doesn't work 90 times. But I think it does for this. But it definitely is a what-the-fuck movie. And very rarely do what-the-fuck movies with intent land. And I do think this one landed. He wanted you to say what-the-fuck, but delivered on all fronts. I love Sorry to Bother You. So that'd be number 5 for me.
It's a great
Gooch, you have 6.
Ooh, I got to go, and I loved his most recent entry, but Ari Aster's Beau is Afraid was just from start to finish. What the fuck is going on with this
guy? I'm a Beau is Afraid fan, too. We must note that. I do like Beau is Afraid.
And I respect the people who do, like, are able to put their arms around it. I'm not one of those people, but I do respect the people who are like, this is great, because it is. He is taking, like, The Bride, like all these other movies, just massive swing. He got his paycheck, and he took the biggest swing he possibly could, complete with a fucking penis monster, him having sex with a woman who looks like his mom who dies on top of him. Like, there's so many things that happen in that movie that are just insane. The guy from Inglourious Basterds, like, eating paint. Just, there's so many moments in that movie that I think in the theater was like, what the fuck? What the fuck is going on?
But you know what, though?
Made me laugh,
him.
Too.
Yeah. Credit to him for doing that. Not giving a shit and making, while not as crazy as Beau is Afraid, still a pretty insane movie with Eddington. Like,
yeah.
A pretty batshit movie. He also, I mean, Ari Aster is what a fucking treasure he is, because he'll do anything. He, any type of movie, any genre, when you think he's going one way, he swerves the other way. I credit him for taking that swing and getting that money and then coming back and also being like, yeah, I'm still going to make something fucking insane. Something nutso.
Yeah.
That's what especially the last 30 minutes of Eddington is wild. Great. So shout out to him. But Beau is Afraid is definitely, I mean, I love it, but it absolutely belongs on this list.
Remember that kid who played Joaquin, the young version of Joaquin Phoenix, and he was like so uncanny, like his real face was just so uncanny valley that people thought it was like AI'd, mm-hmm. like CGI'd Joaquin Phoenix.
Like it was weird.
What a fucking movie. Holy shit. Man. All right. Next up on the list, Clemmer, 7.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the movie I saw in theaters. I was like 14. Natural Born Killers.
Oh, yeah, good pick.
I walked out just mind blown. And so I don't think this is a bad movie. I think it's a very interesting movie. This is Oliver Stone at his craziest, which is saying something. I mean, you got weird Rodney Dangerfield is like in like some like faux sitcom. Robert Downey Jr. when he was really kind of taking big chances and big swings. Juliette Lewis and Woody Harrelson, just like, you talk about Bonnie and Clyde. But they're murderers that are shown in heroic fashion. It's a very strange, weird movie that completely broke my brain when I was a kid and saw it. I did a rewatch a few years later. It still broke my brain as an adult. Weird Oliver Stone is something else. And this movie, but it's a captivating, interesting movie. I think it's actually good.
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad pick at all.
Would you? I got a question for you. Would you? I don't think I'd put it on this list, but you know, it's another one I recently rewatched again, which I've seen 100 times. JFK's up there is a wild fucking movie as well. Another one that's
the
interweaving of the flashbacks and just different things and some of the performances and the characters. JFK is, JFK really is a wild fucking movie.
Like, Tommy Lee Jones in that movie? It's just like, what is happening?
What has he got coming up?
I think the one thing with JFK is it's JFK, where it's like it makes it feel like, if it was, I don't know. Every time I rewatch it, I'm like, I forget how fucking batshit this movie is.
Movie's insane.
Clemmer, Kenjack, you have number 8. Excuse me.
He's got Oliver Stone has a show called Dolce Vita, which is coming up at the 50s in Rome. Coming up, I guess, or TV series.
Huh. I mean, his last movie was the Snowden movie, right?
A while ago.
It's not a remake of the movie, is it?
I don't think so. Or I'm not sure. We interviewed Oliver Stone over COVID. Remember that? And he liked us, which is crazy. Because like he actually, not to
toot our own horn, but he actually he sent like a note. He was like, these guys are great. And I was like, oh, I thought he was gonna fucking hate us.
Yeah, I think it's because we read his book and like asked him shit from his book, and he's like, oh, I thought people were just gonna bullshit me this whole time. But he was cool.
He's one of the most important, if not the most important, director from like 85 to like 94, 93. Mm-hmm. Like there was a gap in movie, like really interesting movie making, because it was so studio driven, and he really kind of took the reins and made some bonkers movies that are really interesting.
Yeah. Really good interview. But okay, so for my pick, this one comes back from a period on Xbox 360. They had a feature on Netflix there, which I'm not sure if Jeff or Gucci ever used, but used to be able to watch it as like a party.
Yep.
One of the best things that Netflix had ever had, and they got rid of it for no reason. Like, you basically get to watch movies with your friends on Netflix, and you sit there and you talk over chat, and like, it's like you're watching it together. It was an incredibly incredible feature. I still don't know why you can't do that anymore. But me and my friends were trying to find like, oh, what's the weirdest movie we can watch? What's the most bizarre movie we can watch? And we picked one, and it is a movie that I know for a fact at least one other person here has seen, which is Gooch, because I made him watch it after he lost a bet with me. It's not going to resonate with you either, you two, I don't think, and I don't, maybe anyone else, but it is a movie called I Am a Sex Addict, which is
I've seen it.
One of the fucking weirdest, bizarre, insane, self-made things I've ever seen, ever. It is fucking bizarre.
It's because you guys talked about it.
Yeah. This guy is batshit crazy, talking about how he's addicted to prostitutes. He's like, I just can't stop fucking prostitutes. And it's a real-life thing. He's talking about his real life. All he's doing is talking about how he's like, I need to have sex. I need to have sex. I need to find prostitutes and fuck prostitutes. Ah! And like, he's doing these insane recreations of events in his life. And where like he's showing himself getting a blowjob. Do you remember that scene where he's sitting there going,
"Yeah,
it's so fucking funny, dude." It is.
He's also disgusting. By the way, you skipped over this part. He's disgusting looking. Like, dude, he is a freak.
Look him up now too. It's only gotten worse. But it is one of the most insane things I've ever watched. And I remember me and my friends were just like hooting and hollering watching this the entire time over Netflix party chat, and just. Man, that was a time, and it might, again, probably not going to resonate with many people, but the people who have seen this, you will understand. It was fucking insane.
Yeah, and like self criminalizing. Also, it's not a sex addict. He is a sex pest. Like he is disgusting, pervert. And like admitting all of this, and like you said, recreating it.
He's like a nasty, nasty pervert, man. And like it took him 15 years to make the movie. It took him 15. He had no point over that 15 years. He's like, maybe I shouldn't make this. He's like. Oh, one day, Clemmer, we'll sit you down and watch.
I have to lose a series of bets.
You lose a monster parlay to get to watch I'm a Sex Addict. It was fucking insane.
Clemmer, number 9.
Gonna go with Howard the Duck. This movie is insane. The fact that it got made just shows you the power that George Lucas had in 1985, 1986. It tanked careers. The director never really worked again. The screenwriter never really worked again. And they had pretty good careers until then. And you could argue it kind of destroyed Leah Thompson's, like, she obviously still did Carolina City, but she was no longer a movie star anymore. She spends a good chunk of this movie trying to fuck a duck that's like a talking duck. And this is an incredibly horny movie. It starts off as a comedy, and some of the humor actually hits. Some of the duck stuff is funny. And then it becomes an action movie for some reason, and the wheels completely come off. But Robbie and I talk about it on Super Critics. But this movie is absolutely one of those movies where you're like, I can't believe this got made. I can't believe this happened. And it was heavily marketed. This is a major summer release. And it is one of the most bizarre things I've ever seen.
I might have to watch this because I've only seen the clip of the duck in bed with the woman with the huge boobs. That's the only thing I've ever seen. And that alone is like, what the fuck?
Yeah, it's Howard the Duck is a, I think it's a must watch for anyone that loves movies because it's such a strange film.
Very. It's hard to really describe until you watch it because it just simply doesn't work in any way, shape, and form. But it's weird. It's like creepy. It's very unsettling. Howard the Duck.
This especially like the sex or boyfriend girlfriend stuff. Also, Tim Robbins, one of his first roles. So you get, it's kind of a weird look at movie making in the mid 80s too. I think it's worth a watch. But it's horrible. I mean, it's bad. It's terrible. Terrible.
Man, but it was so really sick is. When he came through the portals.
It's quite awful.
A lot of weird
didn't he,
stuff.
Didn't
came
he come
out
through the portals?
Era.
Wasn't that a thing for a moment? Because he showed up.
Yeah, he's.
He does. He does.
He's in the Marvel Universe.
He's in Guardians. He's part of the. He's, part
he's
of
very
the
present on Super Critic. He's voiced by Seth Green.
Yeah. Tim Robbins.
Oh, yeah, he's very much in it. Yeah, crazy. crazy movie. Last pick. Gooch.
I'll end on a positive note on a movie that I think is fucking incredible, but an absolute what the fuck. I know Jeff has seen it. I think he owns it too, and I do too. But it's Dreams from Akira Kurosawa.
Oh yeah,
one
oh,
of the most
insane.
What the fuck, in a good way, like a very good way. Visually, I think one of the most creative things ever put to film. Like unbelievable. Good. Narratively, won't make a ton of sense to you unless you like really know Kurosawa because it's kind of a deconstruction of his career and his interest. But even if you don't have that. Prior knowledge or prior experience with them, it's still worth the watch because it's so, visually like stunning, and it's split up into these like 8 chapters, so you get to do a different thing with like each chapter. Unbelievable, but an absolute what the fuck is this?
Didn't Spielberg and Lucas got it made, right?
Yep.
Yeah, they're like I think Kurosawa couldn't find funding for it, and they, because they're obviously Spielberg.
Scorsese.
Yeah,
and so, he plays Van Gogh in it.
Yeah, he plays Scorsese. Van Gogh alone is like, you're just like, what on earth? You're like, what the fuck?
Yeah, that's cool. I think that's really cool. The whole like them helping him get it made because he did influence obviously their art so much. So
yeah,
very cool.
That's a good pick. There's two I didn't have on here. One I thought Ken Jack was going to pick, Romeo plus Juliet.
It's. I knew what I was watching. It's. I didn't have to ask what the fuck I was watching. I knew exactly what I was watching. It's a fucking turd out of a butt. That's what that was.
That's all right. You've never been more wrong about anything in your life. The movie's unbelievable. It's a masterclass. It's a work of art.
I'd put
movie
Elvis
43
that,
though. It's another one I had on my list. Movie 43 still baffled me today. It's a movie that when I shit on it, sometimes people be like, "You're just a dummy. You don't get it." I'm like, "All right, fair. maybe you're right. Maybe you're right."
What? What's not to get?
Yeah, this most obvious movie of all time, I think.
Some people think it's smarter than I don't know. There's a lot of very it's like smart famous people involved too. I don't know, that one's not for me.
It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I would have gone with had Ed if I had another pick. Ooh. That's the Matt LeBlanc monkey on a minor league baseball team movie. I had The Happening on here where Mark Wahlberg fights the wind, and then Leonard Part 6. Which has Bill Cosby as sort of a superhero / James Bond character.
What?
Yeah, Leonard Part 6.
The Happening is a good pick. But my only reason I didn't put The Happening on here is because The Happening, I was more angry than I was back. Because I was just like, what?
Fair.
But it's a great pick. It'd be a great pick because it is like, it is just. I've told this story. Somebody threw a drink at the screen.
Oh, really? Oh, really? That's a
full fucking like fucking wound up like Tom Brady and just fucking launched it at the screen.
Leonard Part
6 is a must watch if you are a movie fan that appreciates bad movies. Like
Bill Cosby with superhero powers, that's a fucking nightmare. Jesus
it destroyed
Christ.
This and a movie called Ghost Dad destroyed Bill Cosby's film career.
That's what it was. That's what killed his career.
Yeah, nothing else.
His movie? No. Yeah. No. Guys, I know you guys say that stuff. His movie career was dead in the 80s.
No.
He was still you got to understand how big of a star Bill Cosby was.
Oh,
this,
yeah.
The stuff, the serial rape stuff, that didn't happen until 20 years after this.
Oh, you don't have to explain. As someone who had grandparents who watched Nick at Night and like reruns as I was growing up, and even just seeing, Cosby was...
Dude,
kids say the darndest things? Come on.
That's crazy.
Sidney Poitier directed on Part 6, right?
Yeah. That's yeah. Fucking
like
insane.
You got like there was a big joke in the '80s, like Bill Cosby, the biggest TV star in the world. His movies are the worst.
Mm. It's kind of, not that you can say the same, but I feel like Eddie Murphy got into that same territory too. Although Eddie Murphy at least had successful movies before that.
Oh, Eddie Murphy as a movie star is leaps and bounds. I mean, Bill Cosby's his movies are horrific. He was also in a movie called Jack, with Robin Williams played a grown man, a little boy. Bill Cosby's his pediatrician.
Ooh,
bizarre.
That's not good.
Nope, bad news.
Other ones, some good picks here.
I'm sorry, you have another one.
I was shocked that Avatar, that was the other anime one, the Avatar, the Last Airbender, Shyamalan. That's another one where it's like, if you watch the cartoon and then you watch the movie, you are like, this just isn't Avatar, the Last Airbender. Like, it's just not even the show. It's not the same thing at all.
I definitely had that sensation with that. I would say also War of the Worlds would be up there recently, because that's one, like, you're watching that movie, and like afterwards when you read about the production, it's like, okay, I guess this kind of makes sense, but like watching the movie, like, how the fuck did this happen? Like, I get it was COVID and everything, but that, Jesus Still. Christ. Cats. I'd say that sensation if it came out.
Buttholes.
Cats? Is that what you said, Goose?
Ooh, Cats is a good one.
Cats is a great pick.
But you also here's the problem with Cats,
already a what the fuck. Yeah. The play is already a what the fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, the problem with Cats is that you knew what it was going to be going into it. But I would agree. Yeah. It's definitely... Honestly, you know what it is? The Cats trailer. The first time you saw it, like, what? Oh, that's how they did it? That's what they decided to do? I mean, Cats in general, too. Again, Cats is a fucking... I've seen Cats twice. Did you see Cats on Broadway, Clemmer? I feel like you definitely have.
I didn't. It was the number one Broadway show in the 80s, and my dad worked in Broadway, but I never went and saw Cats.
It is... I actually lied earlier in this podcast. When I said that The Crown is the most British thing I've ever watched... It's Cats. Cats is the most British thing I've ever seen in my life. It is, you're just like, it's melting with just Brit.
We do have to, anytime we mention, we do need to mention the cats' names before we forget, because I feel like anytime we mention Cats, we can't do it without talking about the character names. McCavity, Old Buster
Jones,
Mustafa Jones, Mr. Mustafiles. Tugger.
There's the Elvis cat, there's Mr. Mustafiles.
Monkestrap.
It's an unbelievable. There's some great music in that show. Obviously, Memory is one of the most popular Broadway shows, Broadway songs ever. Mm-hmm. But that movie is to call it an abomination would be probably being nice. It's just so unbelievable. It's just so unbelievable.
The one who was the worst was Jennifer Hudson. I think the CGI just for whatever reason they could not fix it on her face at all. Her and
Taylor.
Judi Dench?
Yep, Judi Dench. Judi Dench, who was like, Judi Dench, what the fuck horrible. Did I star in?
Yeah, they had edited out the cat buttholes, right? Wasn't that one of the storylines? That wasn't real,
What a picture that is. Oh, my God.
You know what would be another good pick for this? I'm trying to think of others. Like, Enemy would probably be a good pick because the ending was so insane.
Yeah. I mean, any Lynch movie was also...
Swiss Army Man was probably a great pick for this, too, honestly. Like, what was that?
Fucking crazy. I think that's it. I think that's all we got for today. Good time talking about The Bride. It's gonna be hard. Gonna be hard to top that movie the rest of the year. Gonna be real hard to top whatever the fuck happened in The Bride. So, that's it. Next week, the Oscars. Not a lot coming out in theaters. I think Reminders of Him is next week. But for the most part, we're going to be talking the Oscars. It will be a very different episode of the show next week. Mostly a breakdown of the Oscars, reaction to the moments and everything like that. So kind of a different vibe. We'll maybe throw a review in there. We may not, honestly. Like, we may come to it. We'll see what happens Sunday night. We'll probably record something Sunday and then piece together what we want to keep in and take out. Because if the Oscars is a crazy and it goes all over the map, that's probably the most we want to talk about. Throwing a Reminders of Him review in there. Probably be unnecessary, but that would probably be the one thing we review next week. And then the week after that, very excited, will be Project Hail Mary. So very, very excited about that. I am fired up for Project Hail Mary. Very, very excited. But that's it for Ken, Jack, Gooch, Clemmer. I'm Jeff Thielet. We'll talk to you next time.